podcast for March 9th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Mitt Romney's platinum-plated bowl of grits, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And you had Mitt Romney's recipe for grits.
Yes.
What was it? It's grits with Gruyere cheese and
cheese, some chives, a little bit of duck breast, perhaps done up with some shallots and a nice white wine. Then you throw the grits away. Joke number two comes directly from my fourth grade. You know, when I was in fourth grade, when he said he liked grits, the reporter asked, "Hominy?" And Mitt Romney says, "Oh, five or six." See, it's a stupid joke, but it killed in fourth grade. That's all
there
I can
say.
There you go. Yeah. You quit trying to pretend you understand how plebeian meat sticks operate in the human world, Mitt, and just stand up and say, "Yes, I'm fucking rich. I'm crazy ass rich. My dad was rich. I've never had a poor moment in my life. I've never missed a meal. I do not understand how you people operate, but I can run the country better than the other guy. And let's get past it." But this, it's embarrassing. I mean, I'm never going to vote for the guy. I think he's a disaster. He's a liar. He's a hypocrite, et cetera. But it's just embarrassing at this point.
Yeah.
That he keeps trying so hard to please people who hate him so much. And every time he fakes another orgasm with them, they just look at him like, "You realize the reason we hate you is the last 19 orgasms you faked."
Yeah.
So faking a 20th is not going to endear you to us. But as a consultant, you know, as a vulture capitalist, his instinct is tell the user what the user wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they keep paying you. So tell them crazy fucking right whatever the fuck they want to hear. Whatever my consultants say they want to hear this week is what I'll say.
But the Republicans are going to have a really hard time. I mean, we've talked before about Colbert, you know, the countdown to loving Romney,
mm-hmm.
that there is this team loyalty thing. This is our first topic tonight, which is Republican team loyalty. Loyalty to the cause, loyalty to the ideology is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And that has worked for them so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have large swaths of the Republican Party absolutely losing their minds,
mm-hmm.
and saying things that do not resonate with anyone in the United States. Virtually
no
one.
Outside the clubhouse. It's what once upon a time I called the tribe of men who rub shit in their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so inside this lightless, airless bunker of crazy talk where, you know, it really is a dimly lit bar,
mm-hmm.
where they're swapping crazy stories and mythologies about the black guys and, you know, the Jews and the secret media conspiracies with their bigoted buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while they're rubbing shit in their hair.
And
they're
we didn't
admiring.
Have a better illustration of that this week, mm-hmm. than Ann Coulter,
no.
who I never talk about on my blog anymore. I mean, I just will not give her oxygen at all. But she quote-unquote debated Lawrence O'Donnell for charity.
It's a bad idea.
And I thought it was fascinating. Lawrence had the next day, he didn't actually broadcast any of the debate, quote-unquote, which I'm sure was a precondition for Ann. but he had on a young Republican, a college Republican from, I think it was GW, I think it was Washington University, mm-hmm. where they had this debate. And I'm sorry if that's wrong. He had this young Republican on his show who tweeted as he was leaving the debate, "I think I was sitting on the wrong side of the audience."
Mm-hmm.
Because Ann Coulter was saying things like, "People under 26 are too stupid to vote."
Uh-huh.
"Women should not be allowed to vote." And sticking to her guns on that, which she has not done regarding Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice that the young Republican had was, I can be for Ann Coulter and be a Republican.
I'd be a good Republican.
Or I can leave the Republican Party if I choose not to follow Ann Coulter.
Right.
That's my choice. And yeah, I paraphrased Henry Higgins this morning with you. Why can't Republicans teach their children how to think? You know, why can't there be a choice between within the Republican bubble of I don't stand, that is not a GOP value, to deny women the right to vote. And deny young people the right to vote, but apparently, and deny now it's denying seniors the right to vote at the polling place because you want to just have white Republicans with full ID, you know, gun permits are okay, but veterans cards are not to come to the polls.
Well, so, and that's what the two things are going on there. I think one is the fight over the definitional right. The right to define what it means to be in the club, in the party. And that's where actually our first topic jumps off, which is about David Frum. But the second thing that's going on there is I got, as I'm sure you all do, another piece of email, another thing passed through my email box from last year, actually. But it was the irony that this thing existed at all. It was a long list of the reasons why Barack Obama will really win this year. And they were all insulting and derogatory and eye-rolling. And they were allegedly from a Georgetown professor, I believe, who happened to be black. And, of course,
he was going to win because all these unattractive minorities were going to support him.
Well,
that was the point, right?
Well, and A, it turns out the entire thing is fake.
Yeah.
So the irony that you don't understand how insulting it is to fake up a list of bigoted excuses for why your party's failing and then impute that to a black guy.
And
then when you get busted,
you're
just like, well, but it doesn't mean it's not true. But the list was all about how women will swoon over his oratory. And blacks are just going to vote for him because that's just what they do. And Hispanics, well, you know, he's their ticket to illegals becoming citizens. And right down the list, just insulting, here's all these groups that will vote for him because they're stupid or they're blind or they have devious motives. And I just look at this and said, you realize your entire campaign from Barack Obama, witch doctor with a bone in his nose, to birth certificates, to, oh my God, I can't believe I have to press one for English on my phone. Can you believe what the illegals have done to my glorious country? To transvaginal
ultrasound
mandating that. Do you even understand how horribly insulting you are just by existing? Everything that comes out of your fucking mouth is a grotesque insult to some group who might or might not otherwise choose lower taxes and less government, which is basically your core message. But you're so fucking insulting. You're so unbelievably bigoted in your DNA that you can't stop saying it. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part of this, which is they literally cannot perceive of themselves as being as insulting, casually insulting as they are every day, which and they will not. This is the Dolchloss again. This is they're making up a reason in advance for why they are about to lose this election. And all of their reasons are secret conspiracies by minorities and women and the media who loves Barack Obama so much. It has nothing to do with the fact that you're a bunch of fucking morons and bigots, that you just destroyed the economy, that you got us into a war. You will take no responsibility for your fuck-ups. And that's where I think that young Republican's coming from, which is I'm looking at the actual track record of your party that used to call itself the Party of Personal Responsibility. And the fact that for 3 years, all you've done is make racist, sexist, homophobic ranting your core message and shutting the government down and washing your hands of any responsibility for all the messes you've made. And now you want me to vote for you?
And I want to make a brief aside about the abortion, all the abortion bills that are going on. The only cash register that's ringing besides the super PACs for the Republican Party is the pro-life movement.
Oh, yeah.
That's why there's 116 anti-abortion. You know, we have to look at chicken and egg here. The only people that are still writing checks to conservative causes on the ground, boots on the ground, is the pro-life movement. That's it. That's all they've got. So, of course, they're going to suck up to that and write 113 abortion bills because that's the only core base they've got left.
And once you've done that, once you have gone all in, to use the poker term, there's at some point it becomes, and I used this analogy the other day in a post, it becomes like the event horizon on a black hole. Once you get past this certain point, you can't get out.
Right.
You're stuck in there, and you're stuck in there with really awful, horrible, monstrous, crazy-eyed freaks like
who are dying off.
And if you dare to leave, they'll kill you.
I mean,
they'll eat you alive.
And
the thing that is so tragic and funny at the same time, I suppose, is that there was a group of people who were telling you this was going to happen.
Yeah.
They were called liberals. We've been telling you that for 30 years, and you wouldn't fucking listen. So now we end up with David Frum.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. You and I had a really good conversation this week, although it happened way too late at night. I should not ask you about David Frum at 11 o'clock at night and then realize it's a 45-minute answer. But I asked you, because we had talked about David Frum that day, and David Frum had said things and has said things in the past month.
Yeah.
That have made a lot of sense, and even you agree.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, David Frum is right on this. David Frum is right on this. However. And so I finally just asked you, well, what does David Frum have to do to really redeem himself? And I'd like you to give the four-minute answer if you can. Your sound editor would like you to give the four-minute answer instead of the 45-minute answer.
Sure. No,
but it's a good answer. I'd like our listeners to hear it.
The short answer is all he has to do is become John Cole of Balloon Juice.
Yeah.
All he
or
has
Little
to
Green
do
Footballs.
Is burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or Little Green Footballs. All he has to do is burn that bridge. All he has to do is say, I was wrong about the movement to which I devoted my life. I got it wrong. I can see now that Rush Limbaugh is not a phenomenon of the last year. Rush Limbaugh was running the GOP when I was struggling to get into the GOP, when I was trying to make a name for myself, when I was weaseling my way into the think tanks. This party has always been this way. For all of my adult life, the GOP has been this ugly thing with this thin coating of civility and respectability, which people like David Frum lent it. But it's the real heart of the GOP has always been the fine print of the Southern strategy, the racist, homophobic, xenophobic, warmongering imbeciles who are the core of the party have always been the party. That's been the plan. And David Frum bought into that because the money was good. He might have believed, and he comes from Canada, he might have believed in conservative principles, he might have been a Thatcherite, fuck if I know. But at some point, an averagely bright person who is on a bus that's – you look to your right, there's a Klansman. Look to your left, there's a neo-Nazi. There's a militia nut in the back, and Ann Coulter's driving. At some point in the last 25 years, David, why didn't it fucking occur to you that maybe you're on the wrong goddamn bus? And the answer is because they kept paying you. So suddenly, the American Enterprise Institute, after David Frum mentions that some conservative principle might – that they're touting – might not be legit or might be silly or whatever, boom, he's out. He's out on his ass because that's what happens when you cross the party of Limbaugh. You're gone. The minute his paycheck dried up, David Frum suddenly discovered, oh my God, the conservatives are crazy. Look at all these crazy people that are in the party. And he starts writing articles and he keeps his press pass because that's once you're in the club, man. Once you're in the club, doesn't matter how badly you fuck up, your friends will protect you. His friend Andrew Sullivan picked him up and dusted him off and got him a gig at Daily Beast. And so David Frum never missed a meal. It never cost him to be this horribly wrong because he'll go on MSNBC and he'll get to be on CNN because that's what happens when you're in the fucking club, when you're a former conservative. The problem being that he keeps writing these articles interspersed with articles saying nice things about Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And as a writer, I can absolutely tell that he is desperately trying to get himself back into the good graces of the leader of the party that kicked him out. He's trying to find a way back in because that's where the fucking money is. And so as a writer, I understand that that a good writer can write themselves into a corner and then write themselves out. And David Frum's a perfectly fine writer, and he can write – a cliffhanger for himself. How will David Frum ever get off this cliff where he's renounced? How will he save himself? But in the next chapter, oh, that's right. Both sides do it.
Yeah. And Mitt Romney's helicopter swings by and gives him a speechwriting job.
And so David Frum is so transparently a careerist first. he will so transparently go wherever the fucking money is. And that's it. And that applies to a whole lot of expatriate conservatives who really want to straddle that fence. They really want to say that, oh my goodness, I now recognize that these terrible people somehow got control of this wonderful party of mine, and I really denounce that, and they're right in doing so. But the next question is always, well, how did you not notice that? Like the advertisers for Limbaugh, how did you actually not notice that for the last, I don't know, quarter of a century?
Yeah.
And the answer is because nobody ever inflicted any economic pain on me before.
Yep.
And that's where we draw the line. Oh, you have no principles. You'll just go with whoever pays you more. Okay, well then.
And as soon as someone pays attention to that and starts drying up that money and saying, no, we're not going to buy your product because you sponsor this hate speech, then they're gone. Yeah.
So put yourself at some financial risk, some personal, political, spiritual risk, and empty out your pockets. And don't do it for me. You don't know who the fuck I am. You don't care. But the only way to save yourself is to really dig into your pockets and say, you know what? I fundamentally misunderstood this movement, and I got in with a bad crowd, and I couldn't get out, and suddenly my mortgage on my kid's orthodontia depended on me continuing to play with these awful people. I hated myself for doing it, but I had to do it because, you know, got to pay the bills. If that is your confession, boom, I won't ever say another word about you. I understand economic necessity. I understand, you know, looking at those bills going, shit, I can't do anything to pay this other than to do this thing I hate. If your soul is tortured and it comes down to, I had to make these tough decisions because I felt I had no choice, I can respect that. And then you stop doing it. But this whole idea that you're just going to keep sniffing around, trying to dig your way back into the party's good graces, while at the same time explaining why they're crazy, I can't respect that. I never will, because it's so transparently obvious what you're doing. That's a little longer than 4 minutes, but
And you angered one of our sponsors this week.
I did.
Actually, you know, we have no advertisers on this show for a reason. But last week, Drift Glass was talking about Michael Steele, and he was actually impersonating the Muppet on The Daily Show that impersonates Michael Steele. And we did not say that. And it really sounded to some of our audience like you were going racist, which
yes.
I knew you weren't. And part of it is you and I are the unprofessional left, actually. We in our own minds, you guys are sitting in the room with us while we talk to you. And we need to be a little more alert to the fact that that's not the case. So,
but I called.
You got a really well written letter from someone. I want you to read it to our listeners.
Well, I called Michael Steele some very hard words.
Yeah,
and
including
Uncle Tom, and I try to be very precise in my language. And listener of ours took me to task for that particular word selection. And while I'm pretty sure I disagree with where he goes with it. It's a very well-written letter, very sincere, and he makes a good case. This is a thing. We can disagree without falling out because at the end of this, I'm going to ask a couple of questions and then leave it open for responses. But,
yeah, and feel free to write us at proleftpodcast@gmail.com if you have an opinion on this. We'd love to hear from you. But go ahead and read this wonderful letter from Jay.
Yeah.
We'll call him Jay.
Jay begins, and these are chunks, but it is a very fair representation of his whole letter, which is very long, as most of our emails are. Let me preface this email by saying I discovered your podcast on Stitcher,
yay,
about 5 months ago, and I've been a regular listener. I often find your opinions passionate and insightful, and it is refreshing to get a progressive opinion that isn't regurgitated from other liberal sources.
Yay.
Excuse me. In the immediate wake of Rush Limbaugh's latest putrid attack on women, I found it interesting that, as usual, Limbaugh's attacks on Sandra Fluck were so very, very personal. Sure, he attacked a straw man that he attributed to her, namely that she wanted access to free birth control to have lots and lots of sex, but mostly it was vituperative name-calling. And I skip ahead. As many of my opinions about the incident rolled through my mind last week, I tried to come up with a comparative slur against another group of people. One that immediately popped into my mind was the term Uncle Tom. As you know, the term harkens back to Stowe's, that's Harriet Beecher Stowe's, antebellum novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, and has been used to various effect as a slur ever since. The slur negates with certainty that any black man can ever possibly disagree with the black collective consciousness about being without either a moral defect or through some sort of indoctrination. In the 20th century, with a significant, albeit small, number of American blacks becoming both educated and upwardly mobile, the term has often been thrown around haphazardly at any black man who achieves any success outside of the stereotypical worlds of professional sports or entertainment. Opinions be damned, the reason is the holder's, quote, blackness, unquote, the same way that Fluke's sins to Limbaugh was her, quote, womanness, unquote. Very good case. So here's his conclusion. Since Michael Steele joined MSNBC as a regular show analyst, I've gotten to see and hear him regularly. Rarely have I heard political pragmatism so genuinely and casually discussed in a public forum, and I quite agree. The man is an insect of Kafkaesque proportions who seems to live in a series of 30-second morality plays that are unrelated to one another. And as a brief drift glass aside, just a lovely sentence there, Jay. Very nice.
We have good writers.
Very well turned. I mean, really, just well written, if nothing else. And it's really good. That having been said, Steele has never, in my mind, used his position as a black conservative to openly mock or attack black Americans. Herman Cain, for example, absolutely put on a grotesque parody over the past year. Watching him talk about eating soul food and calling white people his brother from another mother made me cringe in a way that I thought I had grown beyond in my life as a political observer. I understand that black Americans can certainly get ahead by using their blackness to advance in the conservative movement as a way to shame and humiliate other blacks. I do not believe that Steele typically does this. His opinions are vile and repulsive on their face, regardless of the color of that face. Now, remember that sentence, because that's kind of an important one. I feel that calling him out for being black does not serve the narrative of the story any more than calling Fluck out for being a woman, especially using a term that is so unpleasantly charged and antiquated. In this case, I believe that it hurt your argument and undermined your understandable, undeniable moral high ground on the rest of your show. As you said later in the show, when you make a mistake, you apologize. Here's hoping that you show the sort of moral consistency that is so often lacking in the world today.
Good letter, by the way. Thank you very much for writing.
And I don't know whether to apologize or not. I'm not going to give you the bullshit apology of, if it offended someone out there, I'm sorry, because that's bullshit. That is not how you apologize. You apologize if you're wrong. So let me say, first of all, that was a terrific letter. Well written, well reasoned, and it really thoroughly got to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what other term to use that is correct, that is precise, I should say. So let me put it to you this way. After 25 years of racist and sexist bile on the Rush Limbaugh show, how can advertisers pretend they did not know? That's part of the letter. Rush Limbaugh is not a new phenomenon. He's been doing this for over a quarter century. If you're an advertiser on the Limbaugh show, you have to fucking know that this is his product. Being a racist, sexist, homophobic idiot is the whole shtick. And when you sign on with that, you sign on with him. By the same token, the GOP is the old white Southern bigot party. It just is. And that's part of the plan. Nixon's Southern strategy, given new life by Reagan, reanimated under Bush, reanimated by Karl Rove, has always been, since Nixon did this, a party that highly focused on sending dog whistles to old white Southern male bigots, Christian conservative bigots especially. That's the core of the party. You cannot join that party without knowing that. You might have been born into it. It might be your dad's party. That's fine. But you can't walk in the front door and say you want a job there as a professional politician and not know that what you are doing is signing up to be a member of the old white Southern bigot party.
Yep.
This is where race becomes important, because Michael Steele is a direct reaction to Barack Obama.
Yep.
The old white Southern bigot party said, shit, we need a black guy too. Where can we find one? And Michael Steele put up his hand and said, I'll do it. Just pay me.
Yeah. And he now needs to do exactly what you're asking David Frum to do.
Exactly.
And what, to a certain extent, Ken Melman did. That's actually a better analogy, which is apologize.
Yes.
Apologize for the people you hurt while you were doing that.
And he signed on. And this is where race becomes really does become important, mm-hmm. because it isn't the old Martian party. It's the old bigoted white guy Southern party. Mm-hmm. The fact that they dug through the midden pile of the GOP till they found a TV-friendly black face, mm-hmm. put him in an Armani suit, hired him to stand out in front and say, "These guys aren't bigots. You can trust me."
Yeah. Yeah.
Is – I don't know – I don't know another term for it.
Well, except you say you want to be precise in your language, and
yes.
I could make the argument that the whole term Uncle Tom mm-hmm. is inaccurate, because if you read that novel,
yeah.
if you read Uncle Tom's Cabin, yeah. Uncle Tom was a Christ figure in that novel, not a suck-up. And so – and the radical thing about that novel was making an African-American slave a mm-hmm. Christ figure.
Yeah.
And so, I mean – not to get too all literary criticism on everybody, but there is a sense in which the term Uncle Tom is just inaccurate on the face of it.
Absolutely.
Based
and
on
for that,
Harriet
and
Beecher
that,
Stowe's novel. So.
But you know what term isn't inaccurate, and I still stand by it, is the term Malcolm X used, which was House Negro.
Yeah, and that's a Malcolm X quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, his analysis of House Negro versus Field Negro. I mean, there's a great blog called Field Negro that also is based – the title of that blog is based on Malcolm X's analysis of where African American men, particularly, needed to be on the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to say, "Well, it's okay for me to say it because Malcolm X said it, and he's a black guy."
No,
I'm standing behind that term, and I think Uncle Tom was a poor choice, and for that, I apologize. However, and I'm not being glib. I really do apologize.
Right.
That term is antiquated and imprecise, and I grabbed for it. But it's on the hanger of my verbal clothes closet. Mm-hmm. That term is hanging so close to
sellout.
Several other terms.
Yeah, yeah.
Sellout, capo. You know, the idea of a trustee in a concentration camp who sells out the other inmates for money for better treatment. That is exactly what Michael Steele did for money. He signed on with the old white Southern bigot Christian Party, knowing exactly what they were, fronted for them for money. When it got too ugly, he got really hinky about it and apologized for a specific thing somebody said or an unfortunate choice of words, or Rush Limbaugh is really an entertainer.
Right.
But you could see the pitchfork of his money guys in his back going, "Don't you fucking dare apologize for us being who we are, because this is who we are." They bought him. They put him out front. And as the old joke goes, we know what he is. Now we're just negotiating the price.
And we should touch upon, not that it really requires a lot of thought to talk about it, Obama's hug of Derek Bell and this Breitbart video released of being in college.
Yeah.
And I loved what there's a Twitter account, LVDJ Garcia, who said, "Yes, Breitbart fans, President Obama once hugged a man in Reno just to watch him smile." You know, this non-event, this is absolutely opening the glove compartment of whose car was it that the old Chicago gangster? Remember when Geraldo Rivera opened up?
Oh, yeah. It was Al Capone's vault.
Al Capone's vault. That's what this was.
Yeah.
But Hannity's going to run that video 30 times today.
Of course he is.
Because it's not about radical.
No.
It is about showing black people at an Ivy League institution protest.
Yes.
Hannity is reminding his viewers about how uppity Barack Obama has always been.
Well, and those tapes, those kind of things.
Yeah.
The one snippet of Jeremiah Wright.
That was ran over and over and over again.
Quoting someone else, quoting an ambassador. He wasn't saying that himself. He might have believed it himself. He probably did. But he was saying, "God is going to damn America for what America has done to the rest of the world."
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm quoting so-and-so. But it's become their Zapruder film.
Yeah, yeah.
They will watch this over and over and over again and glean from every little pixel some new nuance and some new piece of information. And do you see the reflection in the window up there? Maybe that was the person. Maybe that looks like Bill Ayers in that window up there, up in the book depository. Can you
eating
see
a sandwich.
You see it? Yeah. And it stops being any sort of meaningful anything.
Yeah.
And starts being a Rorschach test.
Absolutely.
For
yeah.
How bigoted are you?
Yeah.
And if the sight of a centrist, pragmatic, very well-spoken, very intelligent, very cautious law student and Harvard Law Review president coming out and giving a nice little speech about
an introduction.
Why we should have diversity on campus at Harvard. If that freaks you out, then you have a problem.
Yeah.
And as a liberal, I strongly urge you to keep expressing your absolute contempt for the idea that a black person got into Harvard and he doesn't agree with you as a sign of a larger conspiracy. I really urge
keep
you to
run. Keep it up.
Because the louder you yell that, the more I just shrug my shoulders and go, I don't have to say anything. Look how these people freaked out. The first, I mean, again, I don't want to dwell on Michael Steele any more than I have to, but let us all recall what the first year and a half, 2 years of Barack Obama's administration was about. It was about witch doctor. It was about bone in the nose.
Yep.
It was about Kenyan usurper. It was about you don't live here. You're not a real citizen. You're not a real person. And your wife's probably a whore, or she's a shrill, or she's uppity, or she said whitey. The immediate reaction from the GOP to Barack Obama's was complete racist Klansman freak out.
Mm-hmm.
The second reaction was, quick, let's hire a black guy. And the third reaction was Michael Steele going, here's my price.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me what term fits that because it's specifically race-based. They didn't hire an Asian person. They didn't hire a woman. They hired a black man to front for their racist party, and he went along with it. Find me a better term, and I'll use it. But I'll stick with House Negro for now, and we'll call it square.
I want to mention briefly to Derek Bell, who got the hug from Obama in that video, who passed away last year.
Uh-huh.
He wrote science fiction. Did you know that?
I did. I sort of
a short
that.
Story called The Space Traders.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry, Blue Guy, that's not canonical.
It's not scriptural.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot this week about what's scriptural and what isn't, if that matters. But Derek Bell wrote a lot about something called critical race theory, which I've been reading up on over the past couple of years. And what is so funny to me about Hannity pointing to this African-American scholar and saying radical, radical, radical is that critical race theory is as much about Irishmen as it is about black people and how the Irish went from being really low on the socioeconomic ladder in America in the 19th century to the point where, you know, Irishmen were used to unload gunships.
Yes. And not slaves.
Not slaves, because slaves were valuable, and the life of an Irishman was squat.
Was worth nothing.
Nothing, absolutely.
Believe me, and I'm still bitter over that.
My Irish husband over here is sitting here being bitter in his Irishness.
Yeah, because that's a totally
Mr. Hannity is also bitter about how Irish have been treated.
The socioeconomic history, the way people trade places and swap and integrate and absorb and counter and react and counter react in terms of race and class in America is on its face a fascinating subject.
And it's going to be fascinating to see. I mean, we might not live so long, but to watch Hispanics become white, because there's going to be a point at which, and this is what Derek Bell writes about, which is when it becomes inconvenient for white people to have to shit on a socioeconomic race, to shit on the Irish, when Irish finally reach critical mass and start electing people and start being part of a economic picture that benefits white people, all of a sudden they're white. All of a sudden it's okay.
Hey.
Irish people are, belong. All of a sudden they belong.
there's this, I'll find it if we can post it. There's that wonderful snippet from the very, very end of Blazing Saddles. Okay, you can have the, I don't know, and spics and et cetera, but not the Irish.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was hilarious because that is, in one sentence, it was it was very offensive. Yeah,
who's going to build your railroad? You know, but not the Irish.
The Chinese and the African Americans, I'll use the nice terms for them, and the Irish were all pooled together, and the townspeople could tolerate the first two, but not the Irish.
Right, right.
And the other two just said, no, screw it. We're all or nothing. All right, they can come in too.
Yeah.
But that one paragraph, that one little moment is the history of race relations.
And that's critical race theory right there. Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Funny.
So,
and Mel Brooks put the funny on it, which is why I remember it. Maybe if he'd done science fiction. Oh, yes, he did, and it wasn't very good.
He didn't know how to do science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, the great controversy that Derek Bell is supposed to be at the center of is simply a really good analysis of what the actual history of race in this country is. And it doesn't just focus on black people. It focuses on blah people, as President Santorum will say. And
we're going to segue now, if you don't mind, into Rush Limbaugh Land for just a few moments.
Yeah.
I want to read something, the best coverage of what has been going on this week in
Are we going to lose advertisers over this blue
galaxy? Well, you know,
probably. Lose advertisers. Yeah. Okay.
You don't have any advertisers, Drew Glass.
Let's roll the dice and risk it, Blue Gal.
Sandy Underpants at the Aristocrats, which is one of my favorite totally not safe for work blogs, has been writing a lot about Limbaugh this week and the radio business and has been doing a really good job. And he wrote, gosh, the radio business is weird. It seems to be the case that around 75% of the advertising is done by accident. I wonder if there are any Aristocrats ads running. We haven't made any ads. We haven't placed any ads. We haven't paid for any ads. But apparently these are insufficient precautions to avoid advertising on Rush Limbaugh. And then he gives a documented list. Netflix said that its spots were picked up in error. Deere, which I guess is the John Deere Tractor Company, is reviewing the placement of these advertisements as the company has not chosen to be a current advertiser. Sears issued a statement that the ads were not intentionally run. Bonobo stated on Twitter that their ads appearing during Limbaugh's show shouldn't be happening, and we're looking into it now. We wouldn't knowingly advertise on this show. The New York Lottery does buy advertising on ABC Talk Radio, but New York Lottery spots do not air during the Rush Limbaugh show, except they did air. Freedom Debt Relief buys a wide array of media and does not buy radio media directly. Consequently, Freedom Debt Relief does not directly sponsor Rush Limbaugh. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Advertising on Mr. Limbaugh's program was not part of our 2012 advertising plans, and any ads that may have run did so in error. GEICO has banned advertising on Limbaugh's program since 2004. On occasion, a local station may mistakenly run a GEICO ad in the wrong time slot. Service Magic issued a statement saying the ads were inadvertently run. Uh-huh. And Sandy came up with some more excuses for Rush Limbaugh advertisers that are very funny. We thought we were buying ads on the New Moon Colony radio show. We missed the Rockaway exit and ended up in Rush Limbaugh's ass crack. Mm-hmm. We left our ad in a taxi. Rush Limbaugh must have found it. And my favorite, liberal ears are to blame. We are the victims here.
They are. It's a conspiracy, Blue Gal. It's a genius conspiracy. Apparently on his way, traveling back in time to tamper with his birth certificate, Barack Obama aptly to implant Rush Limbaugh in the American consciousness so that 25 years later he could and Daryl Issa could combine unhinged lunatics. Genius. It's genius.
Yep. And what did you say about this?
The professional left was heard to say that we were told if we did it standing up, we wouldn't get pregnant or end up on a Rush Limbaugh show.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
As long as we did it backwards and standing up, we would never be a Rush Limbaugh advertiser.
This is what happens when you learn about advertising on the street, Blue Gal, instead of
you know, in the church and the home. Right.
That's right. That's right. You end up pregnant on a Limbaugh show. So sorry.
Advertising on a Limbaugh show. But we need to talk for just a minute because a couple of quote-unquote liberals like Stephanie Miller and Andrew Sullivan – quote unquote.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher have all said, you know, this boycott thing, you really ought to accept Limbaugh's apology and don't don't go after advertising, because advertising is really, that's not the way to go on this.
Michael Kinsley also at Slate said something similar. Yeah.
And it just seems to me that that sign that we've seen around at Occupy protests is so true. It's only class warfare when we fight back.
All of a sudden.
Let me
put it this way. As someone who has been unemployed and underemployed for 3 years now, a little over 3 years now, I am keenly aware of the pressure to look at your bank statement and your bills and say, you know, I can't do anything to put my economic future at risk. I really do get that. I get you got to pay your bills. I get you got to do what you got to do. I have friends who work for advertising companies. They don't necessarily like what they do or their clients, but they do it to put food on the table. All that being said, all I've heard for the last, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, since liberals started fighting back against conservatives in a concerted and eloquent way, is
an effective way using social media that which wasn't there 5 years ago.
Yes, with Air America. This is before MSNBC really became a liberal powerhouse or a semi-liberal powerhouse, three shows a week or whatever. But during that entire run-up, and every fundraising letter I get from Adam Green or Democracy for America, it's all about we need to fight back. Send me $3. We really need your support, Drift. Send me $10.
You're Drift.
But it's all about – yeah, I'm Drift because, you know, why would they be?
Because they grabbed your name from Facebook. That's why.
Yeah. Oh, and it's all robocalls and it's all automated. However, I have a hilarious time mentally trying to reconcile the rhetoric of it's – we have to fight back using every tool at our disposal. You are destroying our country. They're wrecking our country. Do you see what they did in Iraq? Do you see what they did to the economy? Can you believe these lunatics were permitted to essentially block the entire Obama agenda for 3 years and they're paying no consequence? Oh, my God, the Tea Party. Got it. Yeah. Okay, got to fight back with everything. And yet I have yet to see a banner fly over any one of them that says, we pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred advertisers to the cause. Mm-hmm. It's, yes, let's fight, except when it comes to actually taking
cutting into someone's income. Yeah.
Livelihood. And this is where I have had exchanges with conservative people or former conservative people, and they do not disagree with my critiques except to the point where I start taking them out professionally. Mm-hmm. You're a careerist. You're doing for money. And that was and essentially, how dare you attack me? Yeah. Look, let's be very clear about this. If you really want to get offended by people getting their asses kicked, their livelihoods taken away from them for expressing themselves, how about you start with right-to-work states?
Yeah.
How about you start with the people who try to organize unions and get fired, or say something on Facebook and get fired, or talk to their friends on social media completely separate from their job, and their employer looks them up on Facebook and fires them, which happens every day.
Completely underpaid employees of Acorn.
Yeah.
Shirley Sherrod.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this is not a both sides do it thing.
No.
This is there is a concerted effort to take away the earning power of women, the earning power of the middle class in this party. It is not a conspiracy. It is a platform.
Right. Absolutely is. And the idea
and
that
they're proud of it.
And you keep extending employer rights under the idea that property, private contracts, you arrange it with your employer is completely none of the government's goddamn business. So if your employer wants to pay you 10 cents an hour, that's their problem, not ours. And if your employer wants to fire you for something you did on the weekend, that's perfectly okay. If your employer wants to fire you because you said behind their back on your Facebook page something bad about the company or something political that your employer happens to disagree with, if you live in a right-to-work state, you can be fired for that, and people are every day. Mm-hmm. So people have their livelihood threatened under a growing conservative regime in this country every fucking day. Well, the advertisers are nothing more than the employers of Rush Limbaugh and the employers of Stephanie Miller and the employers of Andrew Sullivan. And I'm sorry if your employer – it becomes uncomfortable for your employer to continue to employ you and they fire you. Welcome to the free market.
Yep.
This is the system that you advocate. And I'm sorry, but liberals, the liberal folks in this argument – how is it that it stops being us versus them? It's a war for our culture, all or nothing. We all got to be on board for this fight, except if it might cost me something out of my personal pocketbook, in which case, hey, let's not get crazy here.
There is a difference between a group of people on Twitter pressuring advertisers to pull their advertising from Rush Limbaugh and one talk radio host saying another talk radio host should be fired. There is a legal thing, and I understand people needing to protect themselves from lawsuits. There are people that could be sued for singling out someone and saying, well, he should be fired for saying that, because you could actually sue that person for saying that on the air. But this is not that case. This is a group of outraged citizens holding advertisers accountable for what they sponsor.
Yes.
And I said this on my blog last week. This is not about Rush Limbaugh being an entertainer. This is about what kind of a society do we want to have.
Right. And nobody, let's be very clear, because this always seeps into the argument.
Yeah, free speech.
Nobody is threatening Rush Limbaugh's or anybody else's First Amendment rights.
Right.
You and I are exercising our First Amendment right now. or we will be once you clean this crap up and make me sound like I'm not crazy, like you do every week.
Thank you.
Everybody who blogs, everybody who mimeographs, everybody who faxes, we exercise our First Amendment rights all the time. Nobody will ever stop these people from exercising their First Amendment rights. But the idea that we are in an arena where ideas are freely exchanged on a level playing field is insane.
Right. Yeah. And Rush Limbaugh is on the Jumbotron at Times Square, and you're down standing on a little soapbox on the street corner.
Yes.
And that's an equal playing field where both of you have equally valid ideas being shared in the marketplace.
And I agree that good speech should drive out bad speech. I agree that as a general moral principle, the solution to bad speech is more speech. However, in the age of super PACs, of crackpot billionaires being able to just bomb you from space with 30-second ads, that's the future of free speech in the hands of people who have massively more media reach than you do. And the idea that – and this is where it all starts to fall apart on the right. One of the critiques that people like Andrew Sullivan make of their own party, and good for them, is that they're impervious to reason. These people are just fucking nuts. They're just crazy. The facts slide off their back. He essentially – you know, he sounds like a liberal sounded 20 years ago. He won't admit it, but that's exactly what he sounds like. He steals liberal critiques and brings them 20 years into the future and pronounces them breathless and new as if he just discovered them, which I think is hilarious. But basically, his whole idea of let free speech solve these problems is undercut by the fact that he himself believes that no amount of evidence, facts, logic, or free speech will ever make a dent in these people's belief structure. Mm-hmm. Nothing will. The closest comparison I can come with, and I realize this is a little risky, is when the Southern Poverty Law Center went after
the Klan. Yeah, it took their money.
And you can be as free speechy as you want, and you can talk about their livelihood all you want, and you can blog about them and write about them and excoriate them, but they're completely committed to their cult, and nothing's going to fucking change their mind until you take their money away. And once you're poor, Andrew, this is the dirty little secret.
Yeah.
Once you're poor, nobody gives a shit what you have to say. And the minute Andrew Sullivan starts being doesn't have Tina Brown behind him or the Atlantic Magazine behind him or advertisers behind him,
who's going to listen to him? Yeah.
Who's going to listen to him? Who will care? If he can't be on, nobody's going to pay attention to him. As long as David – and I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying that is the way it is. The reason that Rush Limbaugh has an audience is because he tells them the lies they want to hear. And no amount of truth-telling – over here in the parallel real world is going to affect that in any way. And if this were just lying about sports, I don't care about it. But these lies have actual policy consequences.
Well, that's what I want to bring out, is just to extend that metaphor a little further, which is the reason that the Southern Poverty Law Center was able to get money out of the Klan is they sued for damages to the parents, to the mothers of African Americans who were killed by the Klan.
Yep.
And there were consequences to the speech and the thought and the ideas that the Klan was promulgating to the point that the court said, yes, there are damages to what you did. You killed somebody. Somebody was killed because of your hate speech. And therefore, are damages, and we're going to take your building and give it to this, you know, dead African American boy's mother. She now owns your building. Congratulations. And bankrupted them now.
And this is not about suing people like Rush Limbaugh.
Although Sandra Fluck might sue Rush Limbaugh.
Let me put it this way. It's more about the idea of going after – of causing economic pain to people.
Yep.
And the idea that you boycott their products, you boycott their advertisers, and you pin a note to the advertiser's chest saying the reason I'm dumping you and I'm telling my friends to dump you is because you support this son of a bitch.
Yep.
And if you want my money back in your pocket, you have to dump this son of a bitch.
And I have the freedom to say that. And your hate speech damages our society.
And there is.
Yeah, it does.
And please let me be really, really clear. I'm not advocating anybody's free speech be abridged. I'm saying that if you are advocating the violent overthrow of anything, that's not free speech. That's treason. However, we draw a very clear line between, let's say, radical clerics who talk about destroying the United States and terrorists who listen to radical clerics, then strap bombs to their chest and try to kill people. Mm-hmm. We say, look, here's speech. Here's action. It takes place under the rubric of this crazy ass belief structure. One person is providing the brain power and the moral framework, and the other one's providing the bodies and the feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. And we don't draw any distinction between the people who say crazy shit and the people who carry out the crazy shit because they believe God or someone wills them to do it. There is a direct correlation that we as a country draw between people who say bad things and people who do bad things in foreign countries. However, and I'm saying that we owe it to ourselves to say that the crazy ass, hateful, bomb throwing conspiracy shit that the right's been saying for 25 years has something to do with the fact that Timothy McVeigh blew up a building. Has something to do with the fact that a bunch of Republican governors, the minute they got into office, decided to rip the guts out of local unions. Has something to do with abortion doctors being killed. Has something to do, maybe not a direct correlation, but if you're on that side of the fence, you're my enemy. And I'm not going to try to take away your free speech, but I'm going to go after your fucking wallets. And if you're on the left side of this argument and you really believe that those people are crazy and they do damage and their policies do damage and there's an interrelationship between their brain cast and their leaders and the fact that if you cross Rush Limbaugh, you have to kiss his ass to get back in the party. If you really believe there's a link between that and the destruction of things you love and the implementation of policies you think are disastrous for this country, then you owe it to yourself to take his ass down using the tools that are available to you. And boycotting is one of those tools.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway.
There's a reason why, there's a direct correlation between the policies of this party and the speech of this party and the Newt Gingrich training that went on to call liberals anti-American and they hate America and so forth. And national debt that we have right now because we went into war because any liberal that spoke out against the war was an America-hating, cheese-eating Frenchman.
And Phil Donahue didn't lose his job. And frankly, Bill Maher didn't lose his job because advertisers pulled out. They lost it because the networks they worked for did not want to cross the party line.
Yep.
They were terrified of what would happen. If that person – Phil Donahue had a very highly rated – you might remember this – a very highly rated show, maybe the highest rated show on cable. I'm not sure. But surely one of the very, very highest rated shows on MSNBC. And they kept clamping him in irons. So you can't – if you have a liberal on, you got to have two conservatives on because you're liberal too. And Phil Donahue took a position that was directly contrary to the national party line, to the Bush administration party line, and it cost him his job. Dan Rather told the truth using evidence that he got suckered into believing and he lost his job. Fine. If that's the way the game is played, let's play the game that way. But if we start drawing the line at, yeah, you can call Rush Limbaugh anything you want, but if you start going after his advertisers, you've crossed a line, then it really is only entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. And it can't be that. This is real. This is real.
Yeah. Yep.
We want to thank our listeners. I want to thank our listeners for all the virtual hugs you gave me this week. I mean, I know I cried on the air last week, and people were so nice and sent so many nice emails. And several people emailed and said that they were going to send a $5 contribution when their tax refund came. Boy, do I understand that. Thank you. And we're not holding anybody to anything, but we get it that you need to wait for your tax refund to come before you send us a contribution. We totally get it. And thank you for the contributions that came in this week. We appreciate it very much. We got a letter with a contribution that I would like to share very briefly. It was really, I'm not going to cry this time, but this was very heartfelt. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, thank you again for a lifeline out of the darkness. I am only able to check out the state of our nation in small doses due to its toxic component. I am an old retired veteran, emphasis on the tired. My 27-year-old son is autistic and mentally retarded, and my wife and I try our best to just get through each day without losing it. And, you know, we have autism in our family, and we feel your pain there. Thanks to the taxpayers, at least the financial burden is okay. I tell you this not for pity, but just another of millions of examples of human existence in a world increasingly hostile to anyone who does not make someone else rich. You know, this is very related to what we've been saying all along throughout this podcast.
Yep.
I don't fear being cut off or forced into some church charity. We always manage to survive. I only hope that our country can come to its senses to soften the landing of our sad and dying empire. Your program is irreverent, funny, and pointed, so much so I could do away with corporate media altogether. Sorry for rambling, just wanted you to know, as a veteran, gun owner, sportsman, you guys are my heroes. Peace and love. And he signs it Chris. And we appreciate your letter so much, and means a lot to us to hear from you. You can write us any way you want. We have a P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133 Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. If you write us in either one of those fashions, we reserve the right to read your letter on the air unless you say otherwise. There's all kinds of ways you can listen to our podcast for free. At our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, at our Facebook page, and I'm Frances Langum, L-A-N-G-U-M, on Facebook. If you want to friend me, I'll friend you back. We're on iTunes and also available through our fabulous app, available at the iTunes Store. The Professional Left app gives you access to both our blogs, our Twitter streams, and our podcast. We are on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we are on Netroots Radio, netrootsradio.blogspot.com. And Driftglass, I don't know if I told you this yet, we have been given the coveted Saturday night slot at Netroots
Radio.
Excellent.
Yeah. Excellent.
They've moved us from Sunday to Saturday. We're going to be on Saturday nights, 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Thank you, Netroots Radio, for moving us up.
We're the meat in the Chris Hayes, Melissa Harris, Perry sandwich.
We're an anchor.
Cool.
It's great. Well, we love Netroots Radio, and thank you so much for moving us to that coveted slot. Every week we put an Internet Kitty on our website, and the Internet Kitty is a blogger kitty this week. We have the cat of Bloggenfreude, who blogs at stink, STINQUE.com, and his kitty Lily is the Internet Kitty of the week this week. So go over and visit Lily at our website. And if you've missed any of this, if you've missed our P.O. Box or our email address or our Facebook page or any of this, it's all at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Feel free to visit us there and grab all that info. We love you. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties want everyone to know that their birth control is working just fine.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.